When we say live from the event, that's exactly what we mean. Our team of experts are at the track, pounding the paddock, patrolling the pits. More driver interviews, more insight, more information, more excitement. As it happens, it's live, it's here. RadioLeMans.com.
We've come to Rebellion, to the newly Toyota-engined team, now led by Bart Hayden, with the very sad and sudden demise of Hugh at the back end of last year. And maybe that's the place to start, I suppose, Bart, because it can't help but be an emotional time for you to be back in racing again, and for the first time, you're the man at the top of the tree.
Yes, I mean, it was obviously a complete shock back in October when Dad passed away. As far as we knew, he was in good health, so it caught us all completely by surprise. It's 5 months ago now, but you get reminders on a regular basis, and I suppose the bit of success that we've had this afternoon has kind of brought that home a little bit as well. But from the team's point of view, we made the decision, Dad and I, at the beginning of 2010, that I would start to take more of the lead and that Dad would focus on the futures. And it was actually his work that helped bring the Toyota engine to the team. And in terms of day-to-day operation, because I'd been running the team since the beginning of 2010, when Dad sadly passed away, it didn't make a huge impact on the day-to-day running. I was kind of used to having to be in that position anyway. But having somebody to turn to plumb the depths of their experience and just to give you somebody to bounce off is something that, you know, I missed for a long time. I've been lucky to be able to recruit into the team, and so we've got some experience back, but it's never going to be the same. We hope to try and keep the spirit of the team as it was when Dad was here, and I think we've managed to do that. But we're hungry for success, and unfortunately these things come to us all, and you have to deal with it and you have to move on, and life has to go on. It's a cliche. It's one that I'm starting to understand. It's tough sometimes, but Dad, I hope, is looking upon us, and he would have wanted us to push on, and he'd want us to go and be really successful.
You can bet wherever he is, he's looking down on you with a smile at the moment, because as we sit here at Paul Ricard Saturday afternoon, your car has just posted pole position, but with the professionalism that he would love, you're sitting there with the radio on and the cups of the headset ready just in case you get a call from the scrutineering bay to say they need something.
Yeah, well, I hope during the course of this interview we get a call that's good news and they tell us all's clear, but yeah, I'm slightly nervous because I really do hope that news is confirmed. For the team, it would be a huge fillip to come back to the first race in Europe and get the pole position. Clearly, you know, we want to go on and do more than that, but it's the first step in the right direction. And I suppose it's also the correct time for me to say that although Neil, the driver, put in an absolutely stellar lap and, you know, make no bones about it, the guy really drove fantastically well on that final lap of qualifying. The team have worked so hard over the winter and following the passing away of Dad that they all deserve some reward and some credit. And as I say, I hope that the pole position is confirmed in a few minutes, and also that it's the first step in a really successful year.
The very first step for this year, there was a bit of an adventure to cross the pond and take one of these cars over to Sebring, where, if nothing else, you'll know if it'll hold together, because they get battered over there, don't they?
Yeah, Sebring is a really tough race. In terms of the punishing nature of the track on the car, it's a real testament to the reliability that we managed to get in and get to the 12 hours with really no serious mechanical difficulties. The only sort of delays that we incurred were either through minor traffic collisions or also safety car problems. So, yeah, I mean, Sebring was a bit of an adventure, unfamiliar territory. We were working out of a rented space, so felt a bit like a travelling circus, but I think we learnt a lot there. It was good for bringing together the new members of the team and bonding, and put us in a very sort of positive position for coming into Europe. If you like, we've had a slight head start on our European competitors because we've had one race in Anger already this year. So hopefully we can build on that success and maintain the reliability and, as I say, go on to succeed further.
European teams going over to America quite often come back with their eyes quite wide open and a big smile because they like the way the paddock runs over there. It seems to be a little more open.
Yes, I mean, I'd been to Petit Le Mans as well, actually. I raced in Sebring myself as a driver in the GT category in 2003. So I was aware of the nature of the place, and we used Vanessa's catering out there, so you're in the shared facility, and the ambience is really very friendly. I mean, make no bones about it, the competition on the track is serious, but in the paddock, there's a good atmosphere, good ambience, and the whole approach to going racing is a very positive and enjoyable one, and we did enjoy ourselves. I have to say, it's probably the hardest week of racing that I can ever remember, and I'm not quite sure why. I mean, we worked long hours, probably, I suppose, because it was the first race of the season and we were in those unfamiliar surroundings, but even having said that, we worked so hard and it was probably the hardest week of my racing life, still take a lot of positives and really enjoyed being there, and looking forward indeed going back at the end of the season to Petit Le Mans.
Because ILMC is very much on your remit, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we wanted to support the Le Mans series because we've been part of Le Mans series really since its inception. We feel a little bit like there's a bit of unfinished business here in Europe as well. But you can't deflect from the appeal of the Intercontinental Le Mans Cup. And we were lucky enough that with the Lola chassis, there's an element of flexibility in terms of what engine package you can put into it. And through our progression of LMP2 and then bringing a P1 and then at the beginning of last year buying another P1 chassis, we ended up in the fortunate position of having three chassis. So we spoke to the ACO about the possibility of sending one over to America whilst at the same time dovetailing with the European program, and they fully supported that, which I have to thank them for. So not only did we have the prospect of competing in the two series and going to America, but we bit off a large chunk of work by having to prepare three cars over the winter. And as I said earlier on, for the lads, they really deserve a lot of credit for that. They put a lot of hours in. Everybody seems to be up against it with supply of parts. So it's a bit of a miracle that we made it, but we did. And that's testimony to all the folks in the team.
When you look at the car superficially against where it was last year, it looks very similar, but under the skin, a lot of things have changed, not least the power plant.
Yes, I mean, we went from a V10 engine to a V8 engine, so the length of the engine is considerably shorter. That obviously changes the weight distribution in the car as well. The basic wheelbase of the car is the same as last year, so as you say, from the outside, ostensibly, it looks very similar. I can let you into a bit of a secret that we're actually expecting an aero update kit for the Le Mans test day, and hopefully that will then give us the ability to run for the rest of the season with that as well. So, yeah, the car appearance will change a little bit later in the year, but we wanted to not really try and run before we could walk. With having to build three cars, to then change them as well, beyond changing the engine, probably would have been a bit too ambitious. So the plan was, let's make what we've got work, let's make sure it's reliable, and then introduce the update really to suit Lola as much as to suit ourselves. So looking forward to that. It does mean that we can't sort of sit back and have a couple of weeks off between now and the Le Mans test. We've got to upgrade the car. So this next coming few weeks, the pressure is still going to be on.
Wouldn't be in your nature to take a couple of weeks off during the season, would it?
No, definitely not. I mean, the calendar's such that hopefully after Imola we might be able to grab a couple of days, but You never know in racing, do you? Yeah, luxury, absolutely. So,
The Toyota engine, what was the origin of that? Where did it come from?
The heritage there is that it's from the Formula Nippon car in Japan. It's also used in the Japanese Super GT category. And it's well proven in terms of its racing mileage. We were fortunate enough to get the engine installed in the car in October last year, and we went to Monte Blanco and then on to Portimao to prove the installation, and the results of that were extremely favourable, and so gave us all great confidence going into the winter that we'd been fortunate in being able to land the deal. TMG is Toyota Motorsport GmbH, so from the old rally days and then subsequently Formula One, the facility in Cologne is huge, it's very impressive, and the personnel from TMG that are involved in this program all have experience from those days. TMG take the engine from Toyota Motorsport Corporation, which is TMC. And then they make a few changes to it just to make it more suitable for the endurance nature of our races. But the changes aren't that huge. It's minor things, really. But the exciting thing for us, really, is that Toyota, whether it's TMC or TMG, have had the confidence to select a private team to run with their engine. And they're enthusiastic about the program, and they want it to be as successful as we do. So we're working with them and talking with TMG about potential developments through the year. They're really enthusiastic guys, and they do elevate the complete package of the team.
So where was the first approach from? Was it TMG to you, or was it Rebellion to Toyota?
Well, I actually have to give Lola some credit here. TMG approached Lola. There's a relationship there that goes back many years. And TMG said to Lola that they were looking for a two-car team, ideally a two-car team. And the first conversations that we had were in around July of last year, so after Le Mans. Dad and I went over to Cologne in August, and we met the senior management there, and obviously we were extremely impressed, and in some ways we felt a little humble, you know, the team that had grown from those early days of Caterhams and GTs was sitting in TMG in Cologne talking about having the exclusive supply rights for the Toyota engine. But I'm pleased to say that they recognised our heritage, and that we were serious, and you know, we were going about racing with all the best motorsport intentions, and so they had the confidence to select us, and here we are today.
Well, I can only think from a personal view that reflects the level of professionalism that you and your dad's team have shown all the way through, from, you know, the early days of Sabar and all that stuff, which I remember well.
Yes, I mean, racing for both Dad and I is and was a passion. We raced together, and I can remember as a young lad being plonked in the grandstand at Silverstone watching Dad going round and round and round, and not really knowing what was going on, but he was out there somewhere. And through go-karting in the Middle East and then Caterhams, etc., we grew and developed the team. The real success came in 2004 when we won the GT Championship and then followed it up again in 2005. And I have to say that the partnership with the guys from Rebellion Timepieces and Speedy Garage was another great step for us. You know, they were a professional outfit. We were a professional outfit. We were able to bring the two together, and the synergy that created, and the enthusiasm, particularly from Alex Pesci, who's our team principal, has motivated us immensely. And we're fortunate to be in the position that we're able to fund the program properly. we're able to employ professional drivers, and so we can go about the business of motor racing in a high level. And I'd like to think that we're in the position of being the top, if not the top, one of the top privateer teams. And our aspiration is to develop the partnership with Toyota and TMG and perhaps evolve into a semi-works or even a works team. You know, if you look at Audi Sport, it's Audi Sport Team Yost. What a great role model. You know, that'd be fantastic.
In what are very difficult financial times, as you say, you've managed to keep that financial clout, which allows you to be the envy of the paddock pretty much at this meeting anyway, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree. And, you know, I don't think there's any magic formula there. Go motor racing's not a low-cost activity. I don't like the word expensive because it has connotations of being more costly than it needs to be. But, the simple fact is that engines cost a certain amount, tyres cost a certain amount, employing drivers cost a certain amount, employing people cost a certain amount. So you have to have the funding to do it properly. As I mentioned earlier, our backers and sponsors in Switzerland, Rebellion Timepieces and Limo Connectors, etc., they're so passionate and enthusiastic about the sport that they want to see the success, and they understand the funding that's needed for that. I mean, comparing ourselves to the works teams, you know, we're absolute minnows, and we try to give the best value for money that we can.
I'm just going to pick you up on that, because you're only minnows in financial terms.
Well, it's nice of you to say that. Yes, okay, I suppose that's what I meant, that we turned in here to start setting up the paddock for this race meeting to find that Peugeot were doing a 30-hour endurance test, and having finished their 30-hour endurance test, they were flying in aero parts to do an aero development program, and it kind of puts into context what you're up against. But, you know, we're not sitting here moaning and crying and saying, oh, it's not fair. You know, that's the nature of the competition that we've entered. And so we relish that, you know. We would love to take a couple of scalps this year, and I really hope we do. And what a fantastic story that would be. But we, just going back to the budget side of things, as I said, we try to spend the money wisely, and there's not an excess. I'm sure if you spoke to my mechanics, they'd all tell you that they want a bit more money. So, you know, there's not an excess of funds sloshing around. But we're fortunate that we can do it properly.
The Toyota program, is that a fixed-term contract, or is it ongoing, dependent on how you both feel about it?
Well, I'd rather not answer that one at this stage. My position and the position of our management within the team is that we really hope that this is the beginning of a long-term, ever-strengthening partnership. As I said earlier on, we consider ourselves privileged and fortunate to have been considered by TMG to be the team that they select to come back into sports cars. And they're modest enough to say that their eyes are being opened a little bit as well. I think that, you know, that might or might not be the case. But as I said, we would like to develop and grow and, you know, possibly move into being a semi-works or even works team. It's very early days for that. And, you know, the global market and the global situation, and, of course, the recent disaster in Japan, could all have a bearing and an influence on that. We're also aware and cognizant of the fact that whilst we're in this fortunate position of being able to go motor racing, and that is the nature of our business, that's what we do, that, you know, there are people connected to the team that have suffered.
Looking at technology, the way things are going within the ACO, they're looking more and more to alternative power sources, hybrid technology. Is that something you'd like to embrace as part of this ongoing?
We looked very, very carefully at particularly KERS through the winter, because we do believe that the development and technological and evolution and enhancements are part of the business of racing, and if you don't do it yourself, there's always a risk that the competition will. So you have to be prepared to look at what's happening, what the developments are. We came to the conclusion over the winter that with the program we'd selected, with the new relationship with Toyota TMG, to bring an additional element into the mix would perhaps be a step too far. And also, we looked at what happened with Kurz in Formula One in 2009 and thought, well, crikey, if those guys can't get it to work, what chance have we got? So, yes, I think it's there. It's on the horizon. We would embrace it if we felt that it was reliable and that it was within our budget. I hope that it doesn't become so exclusive that only the works teams can have it. Then that would just create an artificial gap. So, yes, we want it. We'd like it to be part of our package, but it needs to be controlled.
It's said that stability in some areas of the team has been important with other changes going on. Stability in your driver lineup is probably a real plus for you.
Yes. As I mentioned, we're fortunate that we can employ professional drivers. The four main drivers in Europe we were working with last year, so that continuity is great. Guy Smith's going to rejoin us at Le Mans, and Guy drove with us there last year. And Jeroen Blikkemolen drove with us in Sebring and slotted in really well. So I feel happy with the driver partnerships that we've got. It does cause me a few headaches because, you know, I've now got to try and manage two cars with the potential of winning. And, of course, they both want to win. So it's a nice challenge to have. But, yes, that's helped. And the vast majority of the team personnel folks that have been with us over a number of years, so we know how each other works, and the new folks that come in tend to be through recommendations of people that are already here. So it's unusual for completely new elements to come into the team that not one of us has worked with before.
I want to pick you up on your comment about drivers and the fact that this is very much a team sport. It's one of the things that appeals to me. It's watching what happens within the team. It's the people as much as the mechanics in terms of the nuts and bolts, which fascinates me. I'm painfully aware that drivers have egos the size of a modest planet, and each one of them wants the very best for them, let alone their own co-driver or the other car. Now, you've just touched on that. How much of a politician and diplomat do you have to be now that you're trying to balance, as you say, twice as many drivers? You dealt with sort of looking after one pair before. Now you've got the overall umbrella responsibility for four of these guys.
Yeah, it's not easy, I have to say. I think my nature is one of trying to encourage rather than be a sort of a dictator, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily the correct approach. I'm sort of learning and evolving a bit on that. Touching on the egos, you're absolutely right. No matter who the drivers are, they've all made it this far by being pretty ruthless. And it's a tough job to manage that. I don't know really what else to say because we haven't had the first race of the season yet. So I'm sort of hoping that we finish one and two tomorrow, but I'm hoping I don't have to make a call to say, look, stop hitting or stop getting in the way or anything like that. Of course, if we do finish one and two, a pair of those drivers are going to be disappointed. Not everyone can win. But as you mentioned, it is a team sport. From where we're all sitting, the team championship is the most important thing for us. And the way that the Le Mans Series regulations are written this year, only the best car placing scores points for the team. So it's really irrelevant whether 12 or 13 wins. And from where I'm sitting, I just want the win.
I'll let you explain that to the boys in 12 or 13 as you see fit. The other thing that I like about this kind of racing is that it makes you think on your feet. you've got to be able to react to situations as they change. You're up against other very professional teams this weekend, particularly at the moment in terms of performance, the Pescarolo team, who happily for all of us, I think, are back on the scene, and deservedly so, with another strong team. So it's not just the internal stuff, you've got to deal with the other teams too. Where do you see your competition this weekend?
Well, Pescarolo clearly very strong. It's great that Henri's back. I'm really pleased that he's back. He's been the voice of the privateer in the paddock for many a year, and I don't think that's always necessarily engendered him to the ACO, but he's a great advocate for sports cars, and is still the mouthpiece of the privateer team. So it's fantastic he's back. I wish they weren't quite as quick as they were. They're giving us a hard time. And from a strategy and a management of a race point of view, they are vastly experienced. ASM have a huge amount of experience of being successful in the P2 category, and we know that that will translate to being successful in the P1 category as well. So they're right there. I mean, you just have to look at the grid. Top four in the P1 category are really, really close. I think perhaps the disappointment for the public is the Aston Martin car, but you know, they're obviously still going through the early stages of development, and that will come good. So I'm not particularly looking at those guys in Aston Martin this weekend. We've got, if you like, two of the four top cars that have got a chance of winning. We won't necessarily be on the same strategy for each of our cars, but it could all be won and lost in the pit lane.
And that's the big advantage of having the two cars in your team. You can split the strategy.
Absolutely. And we've been heading off in all sorts of different directions with both cars all weekend, and we've probably just about ended up coming back to where we started on both. But at least we've gathered all that data, we've gathered all that information. The heat of the moment in the race, anything can happen. You know, you could be a bit unlucky with the traffic. Anything can happen. So I'm not trying to plan too much the strategy or have any too many preconceived ideas. You have kind of got to react a little bit to it, and we're lucky that we've got experienced personnel within the team that can adapt and react and make decisions as they see the race unfolding. But you know, we're also cognizant of the fact that Pescarolo particularly will be extremely strong, and they're probably our biggest competition.
Increasingly nowadays, a lot of the team management, the strategy decisions, so on, happen away from the pit itself. They happen at the back of a garage somewhere, and here at what was a purpose-built test track, the facilities are such that you are normally in a back office away from. You're not out on a Pratt perch. You know, things are a bit different here. Does that make you feel at a distance from the action?
Well, actually, we're a bit contrary to that, because we do use the Pratt perches still. We think that it's useful to be able to see what's happening in the pit lane, and I think when you're sitting in the back of those garages, you're a little bit in your goldfish bowl in your ivory tower, and you're not necessarily quite so aware of what's going on. So yeah, we're still on the perches. The telemetry engineers are in the purpose-built offices. And that's actually a model that we use at most places that we go to. It's just that there's a purpose-built office here rather than one that we have to fabricate. So the decision-making will be on the pit wall. If we see things and issues on the telemetry, then those guys will get involved in the conversations. But we did contemplate whether to bring the two perches together. We've traditionally operated them as separate entities. We wondered about, shall we bring them together? And then I thought, well, no, let's let each car focus on its own race and its own strategy. And my job now is to let the race engineers look after their car and to not be biased from one or the other, and to sort of float across the two, and hopefully not have to go and see the race direction. But if we do get the call, I go and the other guys don't get distracted. But I can be that bridge that tells the other car what's happening, and if there's a team decision to be made, we can just walk together into a huddle out on the wall and make that decision.
I remember from a Silverstone race, probably a couple of years ago, being quietly impressed and smiling to myself that your dad was out on the pit wall with a pair of binoculars watching what the other teams are doing during pit stops. I mean, that's the kind of level you have to be at, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to take the mickey out of him a little bit for that, because we got a timing system on in the team that records the pit stops for everybody in the pit lane. And so if you're racing one person at the beginning of the race and then you end up racing another, you might not necessarily have been tracking what they're doing, but you can change to have a look. So
this is the call we were waiting for from the for scrutineering end of things down at the track here. We'll just let Bart take a breather while he talks to the team. I think the confirmation has just come through for that that pole position has indeed been inked in. Big thumbs up, even bigger smile than there was when I walked in to this this session with Bart. So it's official.
Yep, it's official. We've got our first point of the season. We're really chuffed. It's great news.
Fantastic stuff. I think that might be an appropriate moment to let you go and celebrate with the team. So, Bart, thank you very much for your time. It's been a joy talking to you, and we wish you well, not only for this weekend, but for the year.
Thanks very much. It's been great talking to you too.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.